Some women get burned by the fire and some women rise from it. Welcome to the Born to Rise Society podcast with Laura Sanzo, where goddesses come to rise and go from survivor mode to creation mode. Are you ready, goddess? Hello and welcome to another episode of the Born to Rise Society podcast with Laura Sanzo. I'm your host, Laura Sanzo. I'm so excited to be here today with Erin Edwards. Erin is a Reiki and naturopathic expert, and she delivers evidence-informed mindfulness, herbs, nutrition, chakra, which I love, alignment, and inspiration to help people trust in their own healing ability. She's the host of Inspiring Insights and the upcoming book of A Drink Called Mindfulness, How to Go from Hot Mess to Self-Aware Before 30. I have to ask you where that title came from, but I'll ask you that in a few minutes. And I really wanted to have Erin on the show because she is such a light. And, you know, especially in the times that we're living, I think it's so important for women of all seasons, but especially women in their 20s and 30s, really to have somebody like Erin who shows up on social media consistently and just, like I said, just really has the most incredible light that I think gives people comfort and allows them to feel safe. So welcome. I'm so excited.
Wow, Laura, thank you so much for that intro. It's really, really precious to me that you said all those nice things. And I hope the light, you know, shines through and like a candle, you can, you know, share that flame with others. I love speaking my truth. So if it falls on the ears that it needs to, that need to hear it, so be it.
And you do that so beautifully. So you teach working 30-year-old women how to fall in love with life again through modern mindfulness. So explain what that looks like to, you know, the woman of any season really that is listening and she, you know, is tired and stuck and feeling totally aligned in every possible way, living, you know, in the way that a lot of us do in that robotic state that so many of us are living in. So what does that mean, modern mindfulness?
Oh, that's such a good question because, and it's funny that you bring up the book because, you know, in A Drink Called Mindfulness, I actually speak about four different stages that people go through. And I love that you said seasons, but it's similar in the sense that, you know, it's actually nothing to do with age or chronological age. It's more to do with, you know, our evolution of our mind and our psyche and our soul. And, you know, our soul is in this body. We have embodied, you know, to have this human experience. So I speak about how people actually are, you know, go from a zombie state to a more so, you know, in the sense of, I speak of it as a zombie, and then you go through a little bit of a depression first, right? Whatever that means, you know, it's a little bit slow. It's a time for you to take inventory of what you have in front of you, what you've gained so far in life. And as you come out of that kind of sleep-like state, you enter into the dream world, right? The dream world, which is so many things, unlimitless, you know, divinity that you can access anytime you want. And then again, after that, you know, we have to go through those stages, right? In order to become awakened, right? And that's the final stage, that final, I don't even want to say final, because I think that, you know, healing and recovery and our journeys are quite helical, if I can use that word, you know, as a spiral almost of continuity. But it is a sense of, you know, okay, we've reached this pinnacle and I've learned this lesson. And now we go back and we do it again and we go back and we go through it over and over and over again. And I so see that with clients. You know, people come to me, you know, I've been there and I go through my own stages too. And I've seen a lot, you know, I've seen grief, I've seen depression, I've seen anxiety, I've seen people lost, and I was there not too long ago either. So why wouldn't I help them? You know, why wouldn't I bend a knee and reach out a hand for someone that's in that dark rut or what have you? And so modern mindfulness really brings all of that into your awareness. And at some point, when it brings that into someone's awareness, it's a lot. It could be overwhelming, right? It's that sense of, oh my goodness, all of this stuff has been happening to me in my life, you know, and it makes you almost become a victim, right? And so that's the first step. You know, a lot of us feel victimized, and that's okay because that's where we have to grow out of, right? You can't see the light if you don't see the dark. So again, that's something that I reiterate as I wrote in the book. And it's something that, you know, just speaking on a very physical, tangible level, we can start in our day-to-day practice just using simple what I call modern mindfulness techniques, which, you know, could be anything from, okay, I'm brushing my teeth right now. Where am I? Where are my feet? Am I doing anything else? You know, am I cooking dinner? Am I using the washroom? Am I showering as well? Am I trying to get the shampoo into my hair? Where are we in the present moment? And really bringing it back to the basics, everything from, you know, the daily chores and tasks that we do in life to riding in your car, being stuck in traffic, how we breathe, how we really expand our breath and inspire ourselves. There's a lot of ways that we can incorporate mindfulness into our modern living. And, you know, eating is one of them. Again, like mindful eating is a big one that I teach with my clients. And there's so much, right? And beyond, you know, just the basics, then, you know, we have all this other stuff that is going on, the stress, the anxiety, the you know, the deaths of close loved ones or what have you, you know, the poisons and toxins that we're putting in our body that we don't even really recognize. And so from an all-encompassing kind of holistic perspective, you know, starting small is probably the best thing that I would recommend right off the bat. And that's as simple as, you know, just being here in space, knowing where your body is sitting, how it feels, you know, how your butt feels against the chair that you're in or the bed that you're lying in. You know, from the simplest of breaths that we take. And so that's what modern mindfulness is really all about and what I work with people on.
I love that because, you know, most of the time we're just doing the do and we're not even aware of anything in our surroundings. So, and time is so precious. So I love that so much. So you have mentioned a little bit about this. So this podcast is really about women who have overcome adversities of any kind and just really risen into their purpose and their higher self, what have you. So you share that you've seen your up and downs. You mentioned this just a little bit right now of anxiety, depression, alcohol addiction, and grief. Can you give us a little glimpse of what that journey was like to go from like those places to where you are now, you know, this light for others and coaching others through the through these same types of adversities, and just a sneak peek into that, what that journey was like?
Oh, honey, I can give you more than a sneak peek. It's like opening a big can of worms, right? And I'm glad and I'm privileged to be in a space where I can look back on that and see that that, you know, is a door that I've closed, you know, or at least maybe have yet to come back to. So yeah, of course, I'm from a really small town, first of all. So I grew up in the province of Newfoundland in Canada, for anybody who is familiar with Canada. And it's right on the East Coast, right out in the middle of the ocean. And I love that. And I took that for granted, for sure, that feeling of sparse, you know, that sparseness, that openness. And, you know, I live in Toronto now, so it's a little bit more dense. And I've learned the hard way how to really cope with that. But, you know, from a very young age, I knew I was different in the sense that, you know, I started kind of coming out to myself as a queer woman or as a queer teenager when I was 13. So, you know, coming from a town of 2,000 people, there is no one else in that category, right? At least none that are open about it or were open about it back in the early 2000s. So right from there, you know, I knew that there was something different about me and not necessarily bad, but that's, I think, how my psyche thought of it at that time, right? You know, that I was different, that I was an outcast, that I, because I questioned, you know, my parents' faith, my parents' religion, because it didn't include me or anybody like me, right from the get-go, I already like started getting out the shovel and kind of digging my own grave, right? And that was through no fault of my own. It's almost societal pressures, you know? So that was, you know, a huge undertaking to go through most of your teens kind of feeling like you're different, like you're possibly broken, you know, like, will I be able to check these boxes that my parents want me to, that I wanted for myself, maybe, you know, that I thought that I wanted. And so there's a lot of that that goes on behind the scenes in someone that, you know, is coming out to themselves. And then I say this in my book as well, you know, someone who's queer doesn't just come out once and that's it. They're continuously over and over and over and over again coming out. And that in itself, it can be quite traumatic for folks, you know, just having to really explain themselves almost every time they go anywhere, you know, meet new friends, make new athletic teams, you know, go to different schools and whatnot. So there was a lot of that that was happening. You know, I played soccer and was always meeting new teammates. And of course, you know, that whole kind of stigma of being in the dressing room and people, everyone in the showers and stuff like that. It was a lot of, you know, me just like keeping my face, my head down and, you know, just being really awkward about everything. So, you know, it takes a lot to really understand your own sexuality. And I think coming out at such a young age really, really presented an opportunity for me to do that. And I see that as an opportunity now, right? I can only see that as an opportunity because it really encompassed all my relationships, everything that I did, my friendships, you know, who I was as a person and developing an identity. So that was really the first major event in my life that I kind of overcame something that felt really big to me at the time. And, you know, now I can go on podcasts and talk about it and it'd be totally okay, you know? So
imagine how many people you're inspiring. When you're
yeah. And I think that too, you know, what if podcasts were around when I was younger and I was listening to this, but for me, it was the L word, which wasn't quite that representative of the queer community, to be honest. So anyway, I guess the second thing that happened to me or occurred for me that I kind of went through and I really had to process happened in my early 20s. So I was already, you know, in university and school, studying, making friends and kind of trying to develop my own sense of adulthood. Meanwhile, you know, still coming out to people and everything else. And that was a way more traumatic experience for me. So my father got diagnosed with brain cancer when I was 20. And that was really tough, a huge shock for everybody in my family, you know, and as someone who I'm the youngest of the family, my dad always really supported me and, you know, my athletic endeavors and that kind of thing. But I still really didn't have a very close relationship with him in the sense that maybe he didn't really see the authentic person that I could have been, you know, or maybe am now. I know that he's looking down at me now saying, okay, fuck yeah, go Aaron. But, yeah, there was that, you know, it was a lot of unlearning just for me in the sense that, okay, you know, your parents aren't always going to be there for you. And up until this point, they have been. So what are you going to do about it now? And I felt very alone at that time. I come from a big family, but I felt so alone in that, you know, facing that imminent sense of death. And it really hit me hard. It was as if I, you know, look back on my own life and this has, death has the incredible, extraordinary way of doing this for people, yeah, for anybody who's experienced death or, you know, close loved ones passing on, is that it really makes you look at your own life and look back and say, wow, how am I living? You know, how am I fully, truly living? Do I have any zest? You know, what is this life if I am only living half or partially, or you know, like I'm almost dying. I'm exhibiting death. You know, I'm a zombie here on Earth, and again, it goes back to that. You know, you are a zombie until you realize that you're not. And so, yeah, I had the extraordinary experience of actually spiritually guiding my father through this world onto the next. And I speak about that in chapter 7 of the book, which is probably my favorite chapter. We can get into that later, but it's something that, you know, not everybody is granted. And my father had one of the best deaths I think anybody could have had. He was in palliative care. He comes from a huge family as well. So all of us were there together in his room and we really saw him out. You know, we ushered him out, and I have training as a birth doula as well. So it was really similar, uncannily similar to, you know, ushering a new life into the world and seeing his life go out of the world, you know, after the suffering that he had gone through and all the treatment that he had gone through. And it was weird to me that I felt the way that I did when he died. And that was extremely happy. You know, my soul went with him, took his hand, went up in the sky, went somewhere else, you know, went into the, you know, galaxy of the cosmos and came out on the other side in a place that I know my dad calls heaven. And that was beautiful. It was nature. You know, I felt the warm sun. I heard birds chirping. I saw the river flowing. I felt it, its mist come up on my face, you know, I in that space had the opportunity to look at my dad and say, I love you. It's okay. You can go now, you know, and not every 21-year-old gets a chance to do that. Right. And I don't think any, you know, every 31-year-old does that, or maybe every 41-year-old or 51-year-old. Right. So there was so much learning in that and so much experiential. You know, I'm an academic. I crave theory and learning, but there's a different sense of learning in that, you know, I let my spirit go there. And for a few seconds, I didn't know what it was. And when I let his hand go from heaven, I came back and I was so elated. I was so happy and joyful that he had finally gone, you know, that he was able to really move on. And, you know, amongst everyone else, his brothers and sisters and my brothers and sisters that were crying uncontrollably, I only felt happiness. And for a long time after that, a couple of years after that, I actually purposely numbed myself with alcohol because I thought it was not correct to feel that way when someone dies. You know, there's a lot of layers that we can peel back here, right? But there's so much in death, you know, that I really fell into almost a prolonged state of grief. Grief didn't really hit me until after the fact. And then again, you know, I was already in that depressive kind of alcohol addiction state.
So wasn't almost even grief about his passing. It was more grief because you were able to accept it. But that's because of who you are in the growth and almost like an old soul. So you understood that his soul was ready to move on, but the alcohol was more because of that versus the grief of losing him, right? Which is so powerful.
Wow. It's such a good point. And I think that brings up another thing is that, you know, alcohol, and that's how I got over alcoholism, is that I recognized that it actually really grounded me. Mm-hmm. It grounded me back down to earth in a time when I was all over the place, you know, when I couldn't understand why I was here, what I was doing, why my dad died, you know, why people die in general and all of that, and really trying to grapple at, again, developing a sense of identity, another layer of my own identity. So there's that. Yeah, I think there is something in that that says, you know, we have to actually put gratitude towards the things that are keeping us here and why they are. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Right. I can say that wholeheartedly. I love alcohol. I love it. And that's why I don't drink it anymore, because I know that that I'm okay without it.
Yeah.
Right? It's like that age old saying of, you know, if you love someone, let it go and, you know, see where it goes kind of thing. And the day that I quit alcohol was totally on a whim. I said, okay, thank you for being here with me. Do I need this right now, body? I asked that question to my own self. My body said, no. And I said, okay, that's it then.
I want to circle back to something before we move on. You had said that there's many times that you're coming out, and then you had made reference to coming out to yourself, which I think is like honestly one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. What would be not even advice, but maybe just a message to people that are maybe haven't even come out to others yet and are, I guess, in the process of coming out to themselves? I don't even think you realize how profound that is.
I don't think I do. And I it's hard for me to put myself back, you know, as a 13-year-old. I remember a lot. I remember, you know, having sleepovers with friends and getting that feeling of like, oh, I wish you would hug me, you know, like little things like that, that really didn't make sense to me. And that I think inherently or deeply ingrained in me told me that that was wrong. From religion or what have you, you know, society in general. And so there is an aspect of, you know, being really patient with yourself is probably the best advice I could give. And to find solace in someone that can keep your secret, if you think it's a secret, you know, if it's a secret for you right now. And it hurts to keep something in. I realize that, and it sucks big time. But for anybody that's going through that right now, honestly, it makes the world of difference when you have someone on your side, someone else, you know, it's almost like a belief in like a higher power or what have you, but it's, you know, you kind of are able to relax a little bit of your own control and really just be honest, be your honest self with that person, whoever you've told, or maybe it's a group of friends or your mom or parents or, you know, your favorite aunt or cousin or something, but don't keep it in. Don't bottle it up. Even if it has to be, you know, a helpline that you call, you know, it's in you. It's the fire that has lit in you and you need to get it out somehow. And it's just, you know, maybe it comes out in flames. You know, you might be a dragon for a bit and that's okay. Sometimes, you know, when I was first coming out and I felt really empowered, I would sometimes shout I'd be like, okay. It would be totally okay. You know, I mean, not okay in the moment.
I'd like to see who listened or heard it.
Oh my God. It felt so good afterwards, you know, it was almost like you're carrying a really heavy backpack and you just let it go on the ground and you just hear that thud and you're like, yes, this felt amazing. So yeah, really just try to, if you can find somebody to really, keep your truth and bounce it off someone, that makes all the difference.
I would imagine that would in itself probably would feel like a weight lifted from your shoulders. So you talk a lot about self-care with a lot of different modalities. What are some of your favorite self-care practices?
Great question. I love self-care. And, you know, I think in this culture of, you know, hashtag self-care, self-care Sundays or whatever, it's really difficult because we're seeing everyone else's self-care. And that's one distinction I really want to make, because it's not about anybody else's practices and routines. And take what I say for a grain of salt. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think you really need, all of you really need to find ways that work for you, that serve you. I can use the example of, like, you know, eating a bag of chips while you're watching Netflix. Some people might really shame themselves for that, you know, but if the bag of chips is something that you're doing instead of, you know, drinking a whole 26 ounce of alcohol bottle, you know, maybe that's the better thing. That's part of your own self-care routine. But something that I really like to do that I will not miss is in the mornings, I have a tapping routine. So emotional freedom technique, I practice that. And it's so, so helpful for clearing and cleansing my aura. I cannot tell you, Laura, how much it's done for me. Literally in the first like 3 days that I started practicing it, I had different bowel movements. I felt different moods, you know, just like lifted off of my shoulders for no other reason. Nothing else changed in my life. I was still going to work. I was still stressed, you know, and that was the one thing that I was implementing. So I do that in the morning and in the night. And it's almost like a transitional technique that I use to, you know, go to bed or wake up in the morning, you know, welcome my spirit into the day. Or welcome it into the night. So
I'm
EFT is a big one.
I'm actually getting
certified in that. Amazing. Great. I actually learned it from my Reiki practitioner, but he's also certified in that. So yeah, I highly recommend people checking that out. And, you know, something else for me is just going outside. I'm a really big nature nut, if you didn't get that already. And, you know, being from Newfoundland, you know, you get that wide open space feel. Anywhere I can do it, I get it. I really try to get that, whether it be, you know, on a trail, somewhere here in a ravine in Toronto, or on a beach, anywhere at all, even on your patio, you know, if you have to open your window, if you can't go outside, open your window and look outside at a tree, just stare at it. You know, there's a lot of studies out there that actually say that seeing green actually induces a sense of calm in our bodies. So I really just try to see something that's green every day, whether that be like literally putting my feet in green grass or just, you know, being outside and smelling that air.
It sounds so simple.
So simple. It's easy. People think it's harder than that, right? That it has to be harder, but it's not.
Talk to us a little bit about the connection between mindfulness and energetic medicine.
Oh, wow. I love that. And I get this with a lot of my clients who I take through the mindfulness course that I practice and that I teach, is that it almost immediately they have a sense of, you know, being more in touch with the spirits. And I'll say spirits in quotation marks, because that, you know, whatever that means to you, that could mean, you know, I had a client that her mother came back to her in a dream, you know, and her mother had died a couple of years ago. So, you know, whether it's like an ancestral soul or a spirit guide, or, you know, the spirit of nature, you know, Mother Nature, people really start to connect with the elements of Earth, you know, the most ancient elements, which are plants, you know, and in the actual soil and water and air, you know, so simple, so simple. But, and that's part of what I teach, you know, part of the mindfulness course that I offer is actually, you know, partly I call it rewilding, is that we really have to get more in touch with our natural side, our wild side, if you will. And so when you do that, you know, you could be meditating, you could be in a room by yourself, sitting on the floor, meditating and breathing, but that breath you're breathing is nature. right? It's literally, we have the ability to exchange air in our lungs the same way that plants do with sunshine. And we actually have that ability too. We take sunshine into, through our skin as well. So there's a lot, you know, that we can link mindfulness to. It's crazy how amazing that connection is and how clear it is the minute you start sitting and being present. And I don't actually mean sitting and meditating, because that's not what a lot of people need. Mm-hmm. I think more so than ever, people in our world who are already sitting, you know, at a computer or at a desk all day long, need a bit more like active mindfulness, which could include tapping, you know, which could include breath work, which could include being in that state of flow, which could be anything from, you know, going for a run to walking to petting a dog, you know, it's as simple as that. And so, yeah, there's a lot, there's so many, I could just keep going on and on and on. Even connecting with, you know, with a family member or a friend, I think that has a huge part and portion of who we are. You know, it shows who we are, you know, when we relate to others. And when we relate to our food, the same thing. When we relate to animals, the same thing. It shows parts of ourselves that we don't recognize.
You had mentioned breathing. I wanted to actually ask you about that. Breathing is something I taught my son who has autism at a very early age to help himself regulate just how to belly. I call it belly. It was actually from Sesame Street, belly breathe, but it's actually breathing from your belly. Mm-hmm. But you had said, so one breath equals two parts, your inhale and your exhale. So I just wanted to just touch on that for a second, if you could.
I love that. Yeah. And so the breath, it's English doesn't do it justice. You know, the breath in every other language literally means life.
I love that.
You know, prana, like chi, all means life, you know, that life-giving force. And so, yes, one part of that life-giving force is the fact that we inhale, right? It can be broken down if people are really interested in doing one or the other. And people who are swimmers maybe or surfers have a really good idea of this, right? So you inhale and you fully expand. And that expansion, like I mentioned earlier, is really inspiration, right? Another word for inhaling is to inspire. I love language. I love words. So there's so much in that. And then, you know, we really grant our bodies the opportunity to inhale and inspire everything that's in that air. So, you know, we as city dwellers, you know, go outside and we get a breath of fresh air. It is, you can tell me, like, this is truthful. To be honest, every time I step outside of a plane in Newfoundland, the air smells totally different, right? And that's just how it is. I love the fresh air here in Toronto, but the fresh air in Newfoundland got a whole different feel to it, right? So that inhalation is really, we're inspiring everything around us. We're inspiring ourselves as we inhale it. And that process of exhalation then is really taking that. You know, it's the exchange. It's the push and the pull of life. It's the yin and the yang, if you will. It's the night and the dark even. You know, it's really allowing ourselves to take in and exchange that from which we take from the earth or the air, that element, and put it back out and say thank you. You know, and that's all it is. And I love that. And I love that we can break it down like that, right? And then again, you know, going back to your son and just regulating you know, so many aspects of our life, not just the nervous system, right? Regulating how we respond to others, regulating how our cells respond to other cells within our body, you know, regulating everything from our bowel movements to how we swallow, to the clothes we wear, you know, the interactions that we face on a day-to-day basis. It's so, so apparent. And you can really break down nature in those two simple things, you know, inhale and exhale.
Can you imagine if we were all more conscious just about that, even just that one thing, just on our breath, how different the world would be?
Oh my goodness, so different. I would love that. I would love, love, love it. And I think, you know, you bring up a really good point, because a lot of us, women especially, you know, we're trying to run this rat race. And I think for a long time, and I hope that I get the sense that your community is also, you know, feeling this, that there's been a shift, you know, from this kind of masculine, pushing, really forceful, active doing, right? To a sense of more like, okay, let's just sit in, let's be a little bit more nourishing, let's be a bit more nurturing, let's be a bit more yin, right? Really just like rest and find comfort in that. And there's something to be said for that shift that's happening in the world and the collective consciousness. And I really believe that that is happening. And I love that. And then now it's basically, it's another equilibrium, right? We're following like another, we're getting a new set point, if you will. And there's so many things that on an individual level we can do. And then it will influence the totality, the collective consciousness to really shift that set point.
And let's stay there for a second, because you say that health to you is living a life of balance as much as possible. So exactly to the point you just made that, you know, most people that are going to be listening to this are just feeling that kind of pull from, you know, wherever they are in their life, but we all kind of feel that pull. So what would be some of your, I don't know if tips is the right word, but I guess tips of leading a more balanced life, even just like one thing.
Ah, I love it. I think the best tip I could offer is learning compassion at work. And I say that, you know, not everybody has the opportunity to just do, you know, like self-compassion work all the time, but even a simple act of gratitude for someone else, saying thank you is a really big one and really meaning it. You know, thank you is, there's so much meaning in that. And when we say that, when we say that we're thankful for that, it just brings it back tenfold, right? Always. And I'm not saying that we have to be selfish in that way, but there's something in there that, you know, when I say thanks for this, or, you know, I really appreciate that, what you did there, it has a weight to it that really gives us a sense of, you know, there is more, you know, the universe is always listening, right? So when we're thankful for the things that we have, you know, it's really coming from an abundance mindset, right? And so if we always are thinking about how much we lack, you know, the money that we lack, you know, the clothes that we lack, the things that we want to do, the cars that we don't have, when we kind of shift our thinking and say, oh, thank you so much for this public transit that I had any other way, I wouldn't be able to get to work. Or, you know, thank you so much for these 2 feet that I have, for bringing me to place to place to place. If anything, thank you so much, heart, for beating every day without even me knowing it, you know? And you can go further from that, but that's, I think, a really number one step is to say thank you more.
Again, something so simple.
Yeah.
Can you just give us a little peek into your morning routine? What does that consist of?
Yeah, so I spoke about this a bit earlier, but my morning routine, I wake up and I immediately sit on my bed. You know, I don't go to the washroom. I don't take a glass of water or anything. I just sit right on my bed and I do 2 full rounds of tapping. And, you know, that I've been playing with it a little bit, but sometimes I just think nothing. I just, you know, kind of just tap and then just get out of bed. Other times, you know, it'll be another like extra space for me to do, you know, say a mantra to myself, or, you know, say a goal that I really want to accomplish today, or even just say thank you for the day. You know, I'm moving forward with this thought in mind. And that really changes my perspective on the day after I do that. And I notice so much when I don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how much I notice. So there's that, I think. And then I take a pretty big glass of water. I have like a 32 ounce glass jar beside my bed all the time that I don't fully chug right away, but I'll definitely make sure I finish that by around like 10 or 11. By the way, I wake up really early. I wake up like at dawn basically, because really? I love watching the sunrise. And I think that's part of the routine that I've really created for myself, because I have to watch the sunrise. I like, there's no other way. I like, I'm really affected by, the changing of the seasons, and I don't like the darkness of winter, but I'm learning to embrace that. And one way is to get up really early and to watch the sunrise, because, you know, the day is really, really nice to have. And it means that, you know, we can be productive and all that. And, you know, maybe winter is a time to kind of hibernate a little bit more because it's more dark, right?
So you must go to bed really early then.
I haven't been going to bed as early as I'd like, but yeah, I do. I go to bed around like 10 or 11.
That's not too early.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
So from your upcoming book, you said, we are a mere two-dimensional flattened photo of the three-dimensional version of ourselves that we could be. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on that a little bit? And I guess this could take us into your book and how we could get a hands on it, because I want to read it tonight.
Yes, we are a mere two-dimensional version Okay, let me just say that again. We are a mere two-dimensional version of the three-dimensional cells that we could be. And I mean that, you know, what do you think when you think two-dimensional? You think a photo, right? A flat surface. And what do you do all day? You stare at a flat surface, whether it be a screen, a monitor, through a windshield, you know, through a window. All of it is a flat surface. And if we want to be, you know, a level up, you know, a woman rising, you really have to get out of that two-dimensional space. You have to be, you have to experience your body in certain positions. You have to go places. You have to do things. And you also have to rest in your body as well. And I mean, that's why sleep is so important, right? We literally can't survive without sleep. So there's a lot, there's a lot to be said for, you know, rising up off the page, if you want to really say it like that, that enables us to become the three-dimensional beings that we're supposed to be. And believe you me, I think there's even more dimensions than that, right? That we can access that we just don't know how yet. And we should, if anything, not go backwards, you know, not go towards staring at our screens all day, scrolling through Instagram all day, you know, going on Facebook or whatever, emails, etc. We need to really be doing things and experiencing in our bodies. And one of the best ways to do that, and I recommend this to my clients all the time, is to go buy a set of Legos and play. And just go play. So many of us don't do any work with our hands. And that's such a good way to get back into our bodies because, you know, we don't. We're all in our, we're in our minds constantly, constantly, right? So when we get back into our bodies, into our root chakra and return to those basic, basic things, we learn that there is so much more to life than we know. I think we've evolved a certain way, you know, out of that, but we, there's merit in returning to that on a day-to-day basis and really just doing things with our hands and our bodies and moving in ways that we are maybe not used to. And we have to challenge ourselves to do that.
So let's say that for a second. So a drink called mindfulness, when does it come out? And also, where did the idea come from? Is this something that you've been toying with the last like few years, few months? Where?
Yeah, good question. I actually already published the book. So the book is actually on Amazon already.
Okay.
For your listeners, I self-published and that was a struggle and a half, but I did it and I took that on and I said, okay, from literally day zero to the 6 month mark. And I think it was about a week, a week delayed, but I published during quarantine and it did really well. The first 8 weeks, it was number one on the medicine and psychology category on Amazon Kindle. So it was, yeah, it was a taxing time, but I really wanted to share, you know, a memoir, but also like a how-to guide and how we all have innate mindfulness within us and we can access that. We just don't know how. We can use our pain and our suffering to really transform that into living a you know, a more whole life. And so I got the idea for a drink called mindfulness. I was toying with it a little bit, you know, I wanted to have something, the title, you know, to speak to, you know, the transformation that someone can go through, you know, and maybe the subtitle is better at describing that, you know, from hot mess to self-aware, because it's really what we all are doing. We're just going from hot mess. You know, we've always been hot messes and we probably are still, but we're also self-aware in the same breath. And that's a huge step in that direction. So a drink called mindfulness actually came from, you know, I wanted to convey the sense of just taking one sip, you know, is all it takes. And it also speaks to, you know, the alcoholism recovery that I went through. And it speaks on a much larger level to, I think, the whole society and the notion that, you know, let's go for drinks, let's go for coffee, let's anything. A lot of our practices are centered around taking a sip or at least putting something in your mouth, right? So there's a lot in that. And, you know, a drink called mindfulness is something that was catchy, but also I think conveyed an awakening aspect of that. And within our lives, we all have that ability to do that. So that's where it came from.
Other than I always say, because I'm in my early 40s, like, you know, if women can learn the lessons that are in the book in their 20s and their 30s, they'll enjoy their 40s and beyond even more so. Because I, you know, I come across a lot of women that are like learning these lessons like in their 40s and 50s. And you know what I mean? So the earliest that, you know, a woman could know these lessons, the better off they'll be. So as we are getting to a close, I want to ask you one other thing. Talk to us for a second about millennial apnea.
Yes. So millennial apnea is something I coined in the book. And it's really, again, talking about that screen time that we have, that we really dedicate a lot of time, knowingly or unknowingly, to every day. And so I termed it millennial apnea because my generation is probably, you know, the one that's maybe the worst for it, but who knows at this point anymore. or at least we kind of grew up with the advent of screens, you know. And so, you know, millennial apnea is really that almost holding your breath aspect when you're scrolling through Facebook and Instagram and whatever. You know, you're on your phone, you're just scrolling. You almost aren't breathing. You know, your body knows how to breathe, right? It's doing it automatically. But again, going back to that kind of zombie aspect where it's like just on autopilot, you know, it's not actually consciously aware of your breath. And so it's almost giving it that sense of, you know, we give ourselves over to what we're staring at. You know, we become victim of that screen, of that Instagram, of that app, whatever it is. And so we forget that we can breathe ourselves. And when we finally take that nice, big, deep breath, oh my goodness, we're like, what are we doing? What am I doing? I've been on my phone for 4 hours, you know, or however long it's been, you know, what am I doing? It's been a half an hour and I'm still in bed just looking at my phone, you know, so there's so much in that. But yeah, that apnea thing is kind of what we all struggle in a different way than, you know, sleep apnea or snoring or anything else, is that we really don't pay enough attention to our bodies on the day to day, on the minute by second by second and minute by minute of what we do. And, you know, just taking a breath in between sentences is even, you know, beneficial and something that I could probably remind myself to do. So, yeah.
It's almost as if we, you know, we start to listen to our bodies when it's, you know, when there's something wrong, in the sense of, you know, not listening to it before then. So is there anything that is resonating for you to share? Anything that you're getting downloads that you feel that your community needs to hear at this very moment? Anything at all?
Yeah, I want to mention, you know, I want to say something about what you just said, is that, you know, it's almost like someone else needs to do it. And there is a part of us that is and always has been empowered. And I think we really need to look at our ancestors and thank them for the work that they've done. And as women, I think, you know, we really stand on the shoulders of their work, you know, from everything from, you know, the women's suffrage movement, you know, the right to vote, to, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything in between, you know, just coming from a queer community as well. You know, Pride started as a riot and it was founded, you know, it was led by two trans women of color. And so there's so much that we can be thankful for, because there are pioneers we can look back on and really see all the work they've done and the work that they've done despite so many, you know, like just think of Anne Frank, like she wrote a book. She like struggled through all of that, literally in hiding. You know, there's people doing so much work in their lifetime that we don't even know and that we don't find out until after, right? And so the work that you're doing right now, and I want everybody to really, really sit with this, is that the work that you're doing right now is so, so important, and important for your daughters and their daughters and their daughters after that. It's beyond us, you know, individually. And if we remember that on a day to day, we have so much strength as women to further our movement, whatever that means for us, you know. And I think just coming from feeling that shift from masculine to feminine in the world, what does that look like? Nobody knows, right? Uncertainty is going to be there. You know, when you start from scratch, that's how it is. And I think the lessons of the spirit of the feminine will come to guide us in that, and that's in that companionship, you know, that cooperative, that nurturing, that caring really, really is needed right now. And so go out and do whatever you need to do. Do the work you're doing and do it proudly, because not a lot of us have learned to do that in this life because of so many other things that have happened to our ancestors. But they did that, and they did that for us to continue that work. You know, they went through that, and we have to go through something too. So bring it on.
I love that because there's so many people that are like sitting at home right now thinking, should I start that? Should I post that? Should I say that? And, you know, they're just so derailed by judgment. So I love that because, you know, if they could just not make it about themselves and even make it about future generations.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way to do it. If you have any doubt, just make it about your future generations.
So what's next for you? What can we expect the next, you know, few months or a couple months of 2020 into 2021?
There's a lot. I have a mindfulness course, like I said. I'm transitioning it to kind of more of an online, you know, kind of a space where people can kind of go on and do the course, you know, on their own time. But for now, I still coach people on a one-on-one basis through that. If anyone's interested, just, you can contact me on my Instagram. It's the Erin Edwards. I think Laura will share that in the show notes. And, you know, I started a business called Queen Wellness, which is no longer called Queen Wellness because of some things that I've learned about anti-racism and anti-oppression, because we had spelled it K-W-E-E-N. So we're learning and we're rebranding to a new name, and stay tuned for that because we have some really big things in store. We are right now focused on helping self-identified women walk through the alternative wellness space and hopefully create some sort of framework for that, and to not allow them to fall through the cracks because so many women do, you know, in our westernized model of care and also in the alternative model of care. So, you know, we see that need. I think there is something to be said for, you know, because most of the people that access care, you know, healthcare and otherwise, and I'm talking about, you know, going to see your massage therapist or, you know, people who aren't necessarily covered by your health insurance. Yeah, you know, your energy practitioner, your astrologer, you know, what have you. People, they might go see a practitioner or a provider and they have one bad experience and then they, you know, kind of label all massage therapists like that, you know, and it's not the case, right? Because it's a privatized business. So if somebody was out there to kind of guide them through that and say, oh, you know, maybe that was your experience with this one person and that's terrible. And we're going to let them know that, you know, that wasn't okay, and provide them feedback. But here's another person that we can guide you through. And, oh, okay, you know, if you're experiencing, say, sciatica, you know, somebody would come to our company and say, you know, this is my story. This is what's going on. Where do I go from here? You know, and we assign them kind of like a check-in coach that checks in with them every 30 days or so, that takes feedback from them on the practitioners that we referred them to, whether that be, you know, okay, you have sciatica, you know, you're going to go see an energy practitioner, a Reiki practitioner, because you really need some root chakra healing. And then also you're going to go see your osteopath or maybe a chiropractor to get your whole kind of skeletal framework set out. And then you're also going to go see your naturopath because the sciatica is from the inflammatory foods that you're eating, and you need to go see, you know, someone that's trained in nutrition, you know? So there's a lot of layers, right? And I think that's just one example, but then having that feedback as well for providers to, you know, somebody to check in with them and say, you know, this is why this person really liked you. Or this is what you did after the first session. It was phenomenal. That's why the patient never came back. Mm-hmm. So because a lot of people that work in the wellness space don't have that kind of feedback, right? So, you know, they just keep doing whatever they're doing. It could be terrible or only work for a certain portion of people. And so women are the people who are accessing care the most. And unfortunately, women are the ones who, you know, feel the most discrimination going through that. So we're really trying to create a safer space for women to access that type of care. And it's outside of the westernized kind of healthcare model. It's like people who want to learn more about, you know, what their osteopath can do and what a psychotherapist can do and why they need to go get their tarot read, you know, in all in one, you know, kind of month to see what's up.
I love that. So do you find that, so this is the last question, but do you find that a couple of years or so, a shift in terms of people being more open to practices like energy healing and naturopathic, and just in terms of alternative medicine, you've seen that shift?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think there, you know, there, it has been happening slowly again, like we can kind of stand on the shoulders of our four mothers, if that's a word, I've never heard it used. But yeah, there have been kind of pioneers in our field that have been doing that work for a long time. And now finally it's a little bit more mainstream. And I think maybe that's because of you know, for lack of a better word, globalization, or, you know, the sense of maybe COVID had something to do with it. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of layers in that as well. And I love that people are being more open to it. And in that, we need to provide some sense of accountability to the providers that are working in that space, right? And because it's, if it's becoming a lot more popular, then there's probably a lot more people looking for that and accessing it, and really not knowing where to turn. So yeah, that's the goal.
I love that. Erin, thank you so much. This was incredible. I had goosebumps throughout the entire book. Thank you. Thank you so much. And everyone needs to go out and get this book because it just sounds so incredible. And I think the perfect time for it as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.
Yes. Thank you, Laura. Thanks.